This episode is brought to you by FinditNWA.com, your hyper-local business directory connecting you with the best of Northwest Arkansas. Whether you're looking for a new place to eat, a trusted service provider, or unique local shops, FinditNWA has you covered. We also highlight businesses with a featured listing on the site. That means if you're a small business owner in NWA, you could be next. Discover more at FinditNWA.com.
It's time for another episode of I Am Northwest Arkansas, the podcast covering the intersection of business, culture, entrepreneurship, and life in general here in the Ozarks. Whether you are considering a move to this area or trying to learn more about the place you call home, we've got something special for you. Here's our host, Randy Wilburn.
Hey folks, and welcome to another episode in our Walton Family Foundation series, The Future is Local. In this series, we spotlight local leaders and community builders who are shaping the future of Northwest Arkansas. Today, I'm joined by Jessica Llewellyn, an architect and advocate deeply involved in housing and development conversations. From her leadership in ULI's Faithful Foundations program to her work in Fayetteville's Housing Crisis Task Force, Jessica brings a systems-level view of how design, policy, and community intersect to create local solutions for the future of housing right here in Northwest Arkansas. So without further ado, Jessica Llewellyn, welcome to the podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm great. Thanks so much for having me. I'm really excited to get to talk to you today.
Yeah, no, I'm excited as well. And, you know, our paths have crossed over the past few years, no pun intended. And so we've had a chance to kind of get to know each other. And of course, for people that are not from Northwest Arkansas, the circles in Northwest Arkansas are quite tight. So if you run in one circle, you're probably connected to somebody that's in another circle and so on and so forth. So you have that. And I know we're both involved or have been involved with some Urban Land Institute or ULI programs, especially the Place Summit that ULI has every fall here in Northwest Arkansas. And so there is a lot of people that are super interested in housing and housing related issues and just development as a whole here in Northwest Arkansas. And so we wanted to bring Jessica on because, you know, as a practicing architect, among other things, she kind of walks the walk and talks the talk. And so I'd love for you, Jessica, just to give our audience a quick superhero origin story for who you are before we jump into some of the questions that we have for you today.
Yeah. So I'm Arkansas born and raised, originally from Central Arkansas, and came to the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville as a freshman to study architecture and been here ever since. Yeah, for 25 years now, I've been practicing, and it kind of blows my mind that I'm that old and that's my path so far, but I've worked for a couple different firms over the years, a very large national firm doing a lot of military and government and city and state work, and then for a smaller Arkansas-based firm, and then for a very small firm. And then now I'm on my own Gemstone Design Studio doing a lot of small projects, everything from, like I said, military and government stuff early in my career to like high-end commercial and small residential. I really love hospitality spaces and housing. I specifically myself live in a small scale 1950s home that I love. And I really love helping people find compact design options for new homes. So I've really enjoyed doing that a lot in the past couple of years since I started Gemstone Design Studio, and done a few really fun commercial spaces too, hospitality spaces.
Yeah. Well, no, I love that. And sometimes less is more when it comes to the size of a house, right? Because I mean, you get all these big mansions and ginormous homes, but I mean, you have to heat those homes. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have to do so much to those homes to ensure that they remain what you originally purchased. And so sometimes, I mean, I think the whole movement to tiny homes and to people just going in, getting into really thoughtful design processes to create the perfect type of abode that serves all of the needs that we have in a physical home, but without being so big that they take up an even extra large footprint, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. And honestly, that ties to one of the big kind of subtopics within housing that I find myself talking a lot about is household sizes are much smaller these days than they were 50 years ago. So like I live in a 2-bedroom house built in the 50s. My mom, her sister and her parents lived in a home this size. And now it's just me. And, you know, I think it's roughly 3/4 of households in Northwest Arkansas are 2 people or less with no children. And in most cases, they don't actually need a lot of square footage unless that they have a specific purpose. You know, families need large homes for sure. When you have several children in the home, of course, you may have other special reasons that you might need more square footage. But generally, almost 3/4 of households need smaller homes. And that's part of one of the challenges in our current environment is there's a big mismatch between what's needed and what is commonly produced and has been produced for the past 50 plus years. You know, the norm is to build like 3-4-bedroom single family homes on large lots, which is great for a family with kids. But as children age out of the home, as people become empty nesters, or even if you're a single person or a couple with no children looking for a home, that doesn't always meet your needs and contributes to the lack of affordability for smaller scale households. I find myself talking about that a lot. I fit that demographic. And I know a lot of people who do also fit that demographic, whether it's single people or couples, aging people. There's just a lot of need for smaller scale options. And we've had some hurdles over the years to get that built.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And I'm always looking at different ways to, you know, how can you get more with less, right? In the sense that sometimes, you know, we overextend the footprint that we need to have. And in that overextension of that footprint, we end up taking up valuable, resourceful space and land when we don't necessarily need to. So on the one side, you have a place like Northwest Arkansas that from all appearances on the outside looking in, you would say, oh, we have so much space. We have so much land available. So we could really, really grow and build and really make it happen. And then on the other side of that conversation is simply, okay, if we're going to do that, how do we do it in a thoughtful way that makes the most of our local environment, but at the same time doesn't use up all the natural resources that we have around us?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I know as a homegrown Arkansan, I love the access that we have to open spaces, whether it's our, you know, really nice parks in the middle of our cities or outdoor places to go hiking or biking or swimming or whatever. I also know some local farmers who have land kind of near our cities. And I think that's a common thread across Northwest Arkansas. That's part of what makes this such a wonderful place to live is the access to those spaces. And once they get used up, they're gone. Yeah, they're gone forever. And so by choosing wisely how we develop and strategically using things like gentle density, infill development, those kind of things, we can really help preserve those kind of spaces that we all love. I mean, that's one of the big reasons I think a lot of people are in Northwest Arkansas. I personally love the aspect of, like, I live in the heart of Fayetteville and I can cycle a lot of places because I have easy access to the Greenway. And I sometimes kind of challenge myself, how many days can I go without getting in my car when the weather cooperates and I don't have to go too far? And at the same time, I also love being able to like go visit my friend's farm that's just south of Fayetteville and go swim in the creek with them and hang out in this really wild area or go find, yeah, wild green spaces within a really close distance. And there's not a lot of places in the world you can do both of those things. And yeah, I love so that. True. And I would hate for us to lose that.
Yeah. And I think that's why, for all of the planners out there and everybody else that have descended upon Northwest Arkansas by virtue of being invited in by organizations like the council and so many other organizations, it's really incumbent upon them to kind of find that happy medium where we can still preserve that natural beauty, but at the same time, really be prescriptive of how we do infill development so that it makes sense for everybody. And so that, you know, a dishwasher that works for Chef Raphael at Yayo's doesn't have to live in southwestern Missouri and then commute 30 miles or 40 miles down the road to come work in Bentonville. And these are like real life problems.
Absolutely.
that have to be resolved. And so,
yeah, you made a really good point about travel and transportation and how it's tied to housing. I mean, something that I've seen lately, you know, you can talk about housing costs, but there's also costs for transportation. So C plus T is a common kind of term for that. And Northwest Arkansas, although our housing costs is still in the grand scheme of things in other places in the country, a little bit more affordable. If you add in the transportation costs, we are on par with places like New York City and San Francisco, places that people know are notoriously expensive to live. It's because your travel cost in places like that is significantly lower, even though our housing cost is relatively comparably less than those places. So it's a good kind of reality check of there are major trade-offs when you have to live so far from where you work, not only just like the cost of maintaining a car and insurance and all that stuff. But like I personally, almost 20 years ago, was in a major accident on 49. And I still occasionally have some minor PTSD whenever I'm driving home and hit that spot again and traffic backs up. And just the stress level of that is, you know, that doesn't contribute to, you know, a calm, peaceful life. So,
yeah.
Lots of factors like that.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, we had Joel Gardner on, which was also part of this series as well. And Joel Gardner is the executive director of Ozark Regional Transit. And we just talked about how valuable it is to have a proper transit system in place in a location that's growing, because then that takes some of that burden off, right? That you don't have to always be in your car. And, you know, I just think of it this way, like my son has to commute from Fayetteville to Bentonville to go to NWAC. And, you know, it would be great if there was a straight line bus that went, or obviously one can dream, but a monorail that just ran all up and down the corridor, right? And these are things that we would love to see happen. But I think, you know, we have to take all of that into consideration when you're talking about development and what we're building and how we're building things, because everybody's not going to just stay in their one little square corner of the universe. They're going to get out and go places. So in order to do that and make it as easy as possible, we have to be thinking down the road for what this population will need when it comes to transportation, when it comes to housing, when it comes to, you know, local city centers and what that entails. And I think the challenge that we face here, and I don't envy people that are in your profession, because it's a very difficult challenge. And that's just simply the growth is so fast and furious that it's like, how do you catch up, right? As so many new people are coming to Northwest Arkansas, and it's like, you can't design yourself out of this problem. It's like, you have to kind of keep up with the level of growth that Northwest Arkansas is experiencing.
Yeah, absolutely. And recognize that it brings challenges, but also opportunities. And recognizing that a lot of people who are moving to Northwest Arkansas are coming from places where they didn't have to drive their car everywhere. And they're probably eager to find that option for themselves, even if people who live here aren't necessarily looking for that. I think we have a mix of people who have lived in Northwest Arkansas for a while and would welcome those kind of opportunities. But culturally, I know growing up in Arkansas, it's not common to want those alternatives. But I love to encourage people to have empathy and to recognize there's people who want things that you might not want. And that not only does that help them, but it helps you. If there's a bus line and bike trails and people are like me and maybe 10% of my car rides get switched to bike rides, like that takes me off the road 10% of the time. That's a reduction in traffic for you, even if you take your car everywhere. Yeah. So helping people understand the connection between those things is really important. I also think a lot about, I know we started a minute ago talking about how commuting from your house to your work and knowing that for a lot of people, it's going to be a distance. But that part of that has been driven by our zoning, like kind of standard zoning of keeping jobs and homes in separate locations. And I'm really excited to see us build moving forward in a much more kind of integrated way. I think about something that happened in Fayetteville in the fall was the rezoning of College Avenue to include housing for the first time, I think, in 50 plus years. And that is a key kind of first step to build out the possibility of a good solid transit line along that route is by getting more housing opportunities there along the 71B, what used to be 71B, now College Avenue. So it allows people to not have to take their car everywhere, as well as the improvements that we've already seen in the south part of College Avenue with better trail crossings and wider sidewalks. And I think back for myself, you know, I've been cycling off and on for years. And just in the past few years, there's places along College that I've felt safe for the first time to ride my bike to, because there's been crossings added and wider sidewalks. And there's no way I would have tried to cross College Avenue a few years ago if it weren't for that.
Yeah, no, well, that all plays into this process of how do we think about the growth that we want to experience and what does that look like? And, you know, who's, you know, everybody needs to be at the table in order to make informed decisions about what we want for our area. I mean, yeah. You mentioned College Avenue. You know, I've had people on this podcast talk about, I remember a day when we would just drive down College Avenue and it was like a country drive. And, you know, it was just different because 49 didn't exist, right? And so, and actually it hasn't been that long that 49 has been around. So people take it for granted that that's always been here, or that the Bobby Hopper Tunnel has always been here, but that's not the case. Right. And I think it is important for people to kind of understand that we're still in the early phases of growth. And I know we talk about a lot of different, I mean, people use a lot of different pieces of language to identify the planning and development of an area like Northwest Arkansas. And you used one word that I would love for you to maybe define for our audience so that the layperson has a better understanding of it. But when you say infill development, can you maybe just quickly articulate that and maybe share what that actually is?
Yeah, I hope I'm getting this right for everyone, but I typically think of it as developing new construction in areas that already have infrastructure. Yeah. So think about areas of town that have roads and utilities and all of that. So it can be like existing downtown area that maybe there's an empty lot that can be converted, maybe in an existing housing neighborhood with single family homes and large lots. Maybe that's splitting a lot and adding another home in a neighborhood like mine where the lots are larger size and the homes are on the smaller side. Maybe that's an accessory dwelling unit. It's adding things gently to provide more opportunity for homes and businesses for that matter. But in an area that's already being supplied by existing utilities and things, something I think a lot of people don't realize is that kind of suburban layout with large lots and large homes that are kind of far apart. If they're on the edge of town, there's a lot of extra resource that goes into providing the utilities and the streets and things like that. Even the services like trash service and police coverage and mail delivery, those kind of things. And it's spread across fewer paying customers. So it costs more to your city government, costs more to the different providers of those services to cover those areas than if you were able to add more units of housing within areas that are already developed and already covered by those services.
So. Yeah. Well, and that's probably one of the reasons why like the west side of Fayetteville has just recently been starting to really be developed, right? I mean, when I first moved here, and that has only been 11 years ago, nobody was really talking about the west side of Fayetteville. And now it is a thing, right? And so I think that's really important. And as you were describing your definition of infill development, I was thinking about the brand new Confident Coffee that just opened at the corner of Rolling Hills and Old Missouri, right near my neighborhood on the east side of Fayetteville. It's several blocks down from where Rolling Hills and College Avenue meet near the Fiesta Square Shopping Center. But in a largely traditional single family neighborhood, there's a brand new bunch of multifamily dwellings, and there's a Confident Coffee shop, which opened up, which everybody in my neighborhood is extremely excited about because none of us have ever had a coffee shop that we could walk to. Now, I could get on the Greenway and ride for I mean, maybe 20 minutes or 30 minutes and get to a place and get coffee. But I can literally leave my house now and in less than 8 minutes be at a coffee shop, which is great. And I live in one of the older subdivisions in Fayetteville. And, you know, I think everybody wants that type of experience, right? Whether they realize it or not, I think we all do. So,
yeah, exactly. And I think it's easy to love that. I think when people see it and see how it works, sometimes it sounds scary when you hear people talk about it, though. You know, I think a lot of people who live in traditional older neighborhoods or even newer neighborhoods, and they hear, oh, somebody wants to put a commercial lot in the middle of our neighborhood, it's can feel scary. You can imagine it's a Walmart with a huge parking lot, or it's a drive-through restaurant with tons of traffic. Yeah. But usually that's not what people are trying to do when they are talking about adding mixed use or infill development in an existing neighborhood. Yeah, sometimes looking a little deeper and not jumping to assumptions and conclusions can be really helpful.
Yeah, no, without a doubt. And I hope that more, you know, not necessarily this one location, Confident Coffee, opens up in other places. I just hope that outlets like that get opened up in other neighborhoods in this area, so that to the point where people can literally like walk or a quick bike ride to, you know, to some of these resources that they would really, you know, would really gravitate towards. So,
yeah, absolutely. I love that in the area that I'm in. I'm a quick walk or bike ride to a couple of restaurants, to a grocery store, to a couple of coffee shops. And yeah, I think having that option is so nice. Like, in fact, it sometimes draws people to come meet me at my house and let's walk or bike to something because it's fun.
Exactly.
You get some sunshine, you get a little wind in your hair, and you get to maybe take your dog with you or whatever. And it's universally appealing. And yeah.
That's cool. I love that. Okay. So I want to talk about specifically, I mean, there's a lot that I'd love to cover here. And man, if we have to end up putting a comma in this conversation and continue, we'll do that. But for right now, I do want to talk about some of the overarching concepts around housing that we have seen, whether through ULI, whether through Groundworks and the folks at the Northwest Arkansas Council, or whether through the Walton Family Foundation or any other organization that has a vested interest in how the infrastructure of Northwest Arkansas continues to expand and expand properly. But, you know, this whole concept of the future is local. Why must the future of housing in Northwest Arkansas be shaped through local solutions?
Oh, man. I mean, this immediately takes me to one of my kind of pet topics that I love to encourage people to do is, you know, I think having a whole bunch of local people who are paying attention to the needs of the community and who want to contribute in a small way is so healthy for a community. Like, we all know someone who could use an affordable option for housing, usually a small scale something. I mean, I think about if you're a parent, your kids probably have teachers who would love to live in a small scale housing unit in an existing neighborhood, but they might have to drive really far, or they might have to live in a big apartment complex because that's the only thing that's affordable for them. Or we might have aging parents or, you know, children who are ready to move out of the house, but have a hard time finding a place to live. So thinking about people like that, and if you have an existing home, we know how the lending environment is right now. Interest rates are high. It's hard to want to sell your home and move somewhere else for a higher interest rate to get a smaller home. Maybe that's not the best option for you. You know, there's lots of options in terms of like adding accessory dwelling units and potentially providing a really great option for someone you know and care about. Maybe it's even the person who checks your groceries or serves you coffee at your favorite coffee shop. And that also keeps a lot of the kind of ownership and wealth in our community too. I mean, it's real easy to complain about big out of town developers. Like, that's who is going to come build big apartment complexes. And we do need some of that. That's who's going to build big single family housing neighborhoods. And we do need some of that. But, you know, all the stuff in between, it really needs local, smaller scale people. And there's options, even if you're just a homeowner and you want to add an accessory dwelling unit, or there's an empty lot next to you, you've thought about building or converting a single family home to multiple units. Like, that's something that it takes a little effort. It takes a little risk. You know, there's some finance components to it, There's some knowledge and learning components to it, but it actually is an attainable way to provide options for people in your community and to even build in potentially some stable income as you age, passive income. Those kind of things are really helpful for people. So I love that idea. There's a program that I help lead with ULI called Ready Real Estate Diversity Initiative. And it's for women and people of color to learn the land development process kind of from start to front. It's an introductory course. But a lot of people that come through there are local citizens who want to build something small to provide some housing. I've been a part of two different cohorts of that. And there's another one coming up soon. So pay attention to ULI social media and emails if you're interested. But it gives such a great basic understanding of how, as a citizen, as a homeowner, as a landowner, you can provide something great for your community and get good things in return too.
Yeah. No, you know, and I'm glad you mentioned Ready. It's a great program. I've had the privilege and the pleasure to speak to that cohort at one point in time. My wife actually participated in one of the cohorts, and you know, her perspective on land and on land use changed once she went through that program. And I think sometimes a little education goes a long way, right?
Absolutely.
And it helps all of us have a better understanding. And even those people that may have been a little nimbyist in their views, right? Not in my backyard, folks. And now all of a sudden see the value of an ADU or an accessory dwelling unit and how that can really make a difference. And so, I mean, you said it as perfectly as could be said, the value of being able to provide housing for, you know, maybe somebody that locally serves you on a regular basis. Maybe it's a waiter at a restaurant, a cashier at your local store. So, you know, the local mechanic, I mean, there's just a number of different opportunities that local housing can really help the situation. So it makes a huge difference. So, you know, and I also think about, I will add this. I had a gentleman named Bruce Katz on a while ago, and he talked about, you know, the new localism. And one of the things that he said to me offline was that, you know, the government's not coming to rescue anybody when it comes to housing or housing related issues. It all has to be solved on a local level, right? And that's something that I think it bears repeating over and over again, because people keep thinking, oh, well, somebody down the road is going to solve this, or somebody at a higher level or at the state or at the federal level is going to come and have all the provide all the solutions. You actually have to provide the solutions. You, Joe and Jane Citizen of Northwest Arkansas, have to provide the solutions. And cities like Centerton and others are finding that out and coming up with plans and ways that can meet the local housing needs in their area.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's so key for people to see the connection between their lives and how they can make a difference. And not everyone is a homeowner or a landowner and may not be able to do some of the things I was talking about earlier, but there are still ways to help participate in that process. I mean, you can volunteer or apply for different city committees or boards. I mean, that's how I ended up on the Fayetteville Housing Crisis Task Force. I just applied for it. And there's lots, each community in our area has different types of things that are connected to housing and development in your city. And so finding something that you care about that you can go contribute to is really important, especially as you mentioned, there are NIMBYs. A lot of times people who speak out against certain types of things, from my perspective and my knowledge that I've built, a lot of times are very underinformed or misinformed. And so even just being a voice to people around you in support of things that are good for your community from a place of knowledge and understanding and compassion is so important. I mean, one thing during my time at the Fayetteville Housing Crisis Task Force, after talking to different staff members and other people at the city, I realized how important it is for people to come out and support things, not just to speak out against things. Because usually people that want to speak out against things are very angry, and there's not a lot of people who are actively trying to support things. So it's kind of like the Yelp reviews. It's like if things are good, people just kind of don't leave reviews, right? But the people who are really angry are the one who leave the review. So it's kind of similar in terms of feedback at the city level. Sometimes it's usually only the people who are very angry. And they, a lot of times, are the people who have the most time on their hands, whether it's because they maybe don't have to work the same hours as a lot of people, maybe because they're retired, maybe because, I don't know, lots of different reasons. So it does take some sacrifice as a citizen to have your voice heard, but that doesn't always mean showing up at a city council meeting. That can mean talking to a representative. That can mean sending emails. That can mean signing petitions. So as someone who in my past has been very apolitical and still see myself generally as pretty apolitical, I see how valuable at the city level, like you mentioned from Bruce Katz, it really is needed and important and makes a difference. It's like, yeah. I, as a voter, I have a very small effect on national issues, but the issues that are happening in my city and in my neighborhood, if I show up and voice my support or my concerns, like, I can have a much more significant effect on things that actually affect me on a daily basis.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. No, and that goes without saying. And so, you know, my encouragement is, I tell people all the time, I mean, the squeaky wheel always gets the grease. Mm-hmm. And you've got to speak up when you see something that you have an issue with or a concern about, and how to, you know, resolve those problems. But again, I think sometimes, you know, even with folks that are the NIMBY folks, a lot of times, like you said, it's just perspective and giving additional data points, which is really helpful, because, you know, too often we fly off without having all of the data points and information. And I think it's important for us to have that. And the other point that you brought up is just getting involved at a local level. Come to some of your city council meetings, understand how they're operated, participate in the planning commission meetings. Those are the real important ones, especially in every city and town that has a planning commission. Because if you want to figure out exactly what's happening and not feel like you're blindsided by a new development, because like nobody ever told you, well, if you didn't come to a planning commission, or if you didn't read the paper the next day to find out what they talked about, you're not going to know. So, I mean, I think so that's why that whole idea of localism and just getting really involved at a local level really can pay off for everyone, not just for those that are in, that have been voted into office or that are running these meetings.
Yeah, for sure. Also, think about the fact that we in Northwest Arkansas have such a richness of very smart and very educated experts, whether they are, you know, your city staff, or different people working for different organizations. We have a lot of great people in the area who understand what's happening at a broader kind of level than maybe an everyday citizen, and knowing who to check in with, who to be paying attention to for the things that you care about, especially related to development and housing. And yeah, we have really great resources if you want to stay educated and you want to know what's going on.
Yeah, we absolutely do. So listen, I want to ask you, what has it meant for you personally to work on affordable housing efforts in your own community?
Yeah, I will say most of my career before being part of the Housing Task Force and before really my involvement with ULI was either very kind of government focused or kind of high end, serving people who want to spend money, which is great. We need lots of that stuff. But I had never really had my hands in anything related to affordable housing before. And as someone who, like, my faith and my values are really important to me, and to get to kind of connect this desire to help serve my community and to serve people who need help in the way that I have at the Housing Crisis Task Force and other ULI things has just been really meaningful for me to connect those things in a way. It felt like most of my work had been segmented from that part of me. That's such a core thing, a desire to serve and help. So yeah, that's been an exciting aspect. It's really opened my eyes to the complexity of things. I mean, we've hit on several things already, but there's so many complex forces at work that lead to, you know, unaffordability, lead to people in need not getting what they need. And so being able to understand that and hopefully help move the needle a little bit. I actually, kind of accidentally, but kind of on purpose, ended up with a catchphrase while I was on the task force. You know, we all hear there's no silver bullet. At one point, I was like, there's no silver bullet, but I hope there's silver buckshot. I mean, like I said, I'm an Arkansas girl. I come from a family that hunts. I have friends that hunt. If you don't know what buckshot is, has a bunch of little pellets in one bullet. And that was kind of the approach we took as the housing task force, is knowing you can't just do one big thing and solve all the issues related to housing. But our hope was, and I continue to hope and believe, that a lot of small action in a lot of areas is what will really help us get to where we need to be.
Yeah. No, I love that. I love that silver buckshot. That, yeah, definitely. Cause that, those buckshots, they'll just pepper you all over the place. So, you know, you think you may not hit your target, but you will. You'll cover a lot of area, that's for sure. So then obviously you took a lot of lessons away from that task force and your participation. And we should make people aware of at the time of recording this, that task force only had a limited shelf life. It wasn't to be in perpetuity. And it's technically over now. And one of the big things that came from the task force was that they were going to create a housing professional role with the city of Fayetteville to help with overseeing the housing challenges and issues that a lot of the things that you identified through the housing task force. I would be curious to know, in addition to what you've already mentioned, what else was a key takeaway for you from the housing task force?
Yeah, I really appreciated getting to interact with just the task force members. We had a wide variety. We did have three architects, but we were a variety of a group, even within the architects. But we were 10 volunteers with a variety of backgrounds. And just to get to hear so many different perspectives was really interesting. And then, you know, something that we did that I really stand by and love that we did was we had different guest speakers come to our meetings because they were public. And there were a lot of people who were paying attention to what our meetings were including. And so we really wanted to not just us learn about these different factors, but to help others who were interested to learn about them too. So, yeah, I mean, some of the things we've already talked about, I think really came to fruition in my own mind and heart through the task force. Things like showing up in favor of things, not just against things, small scale, local, neighborhood involvement to help get things built to serve the kind of the local community. Yeah, just generally the recognition that we have so many great experts too, and that sometimes it really just takes getting the right people in the room together. And sometimes it takes one person pulling the different threads together to braid them into a rope to actually get it to where it's functional, which is where I think that chief housing officer position really came from. And I'm really excited that they filled that position. I think they made a good choice. It just announced a few weeks ago. I think it's going to be great for the city to have kind of one person leading the charge and looking out for how housing is affected by all the different departments across the city.
Yeah. And obviously, and I don't know, I'm assuming every city in Northwest Arkansas at some point in time is going to have some type of housing task force program put together. Are you aware of any other cities that have done a housing task force similar to what Fayetteville has done?
Yeah, we did during our task force hear from someone who was part of one in Bentonville a few years ago.
Okay.
Granted, the environment there was a little different. And I think this person that spoke to our task force was a little disappointed they hadn't seen as much movement as they had hoped. But I hope that Bentonville will revisit that. And my hope is that other cities, even smaller cities, will follow suit, even if it's just within the city staff. Maybe it's not citizens, maybe it's not volunteers, but to really look at housing as its own thing, because, you know, every department in a city affects housing, whether it's trees or streets or services. Like, housing is affected by all of them and can affect all of them. And if you're not looking at it as a whole, it can kind of just sit there and languish or turn into something that you don't necessarily want. You know, our smaller cities in the area, surrounding cities, have been growing so fast. And I think some of them got hit so quickly with development that they weren't prepared for. And they're having to kind of make it work now, right? And hopefully that is a little bit of a little flag to say, hey, let's get ahead of the next wave. Let's not accidentally end up somewhere we don't want to be, because we really do have the chance to get it right around here if we'll take action now, start putting things in place now. I mean, people like to compare Northwest Arkansas now to places like Austin 20 years ago or Nashville 10, 15 years ago, whatever. And like, let's learn from what they didn't do or learn right. from the things that they're struggling with now. How can we head those things off now if we start now in Northwest Arkansas?
Absolutely. Yeah. And actually, as of the day that we are recording this, there was a recent article in the paper about how fast a city like Taneytown has grown, like maybe 2,500 people not terribly long ago. And they're almost at 10,000, which wow. And that's a huge number. I mean, so every small city, every city that is part of the spokes of Northwest Arkansas that come out or emanate out from, you know, Fayetteville, Springdale, Rogers, and Bentonville, they're all experiencing growth. And I mentioned Centerton earlier and Prairie Grove and Farmington. And I mean, the list goes on and on. West Fork, I mean, you name it. Places that when I first moved here, they were just like, I mean, these are pasture lands and farmlands. And now it's like, hey, where are you living? Oh, I live in West Fork. And it's like, really? Like, yep, I live in West Fork. So, you know, and again, that's nothing against West Fork. It's just that's where people are. People are going to a lot of different places. So, you know, I suspect that in the next 15 or 20 years, you know, you'll hear a bunch of different folks that are talking about, hey, I'm in the greater Northwest Arkansas area. And that could be everything from Elkins to West Fork to Siloam to, I mean, the list goes on and on and on. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I love that we have some great programs at ULI. I'm not directly involved, but there's some programs at ULI that really help support those smaller cities. And I love getting to hear about all of that. Like I said, I'm not directly involved in that, so I don't have a ton of info on it.
Sure.
But I hope that all of our Northwest Arkansas kind of smaller cities outside the Big Four can get a turn to do that.
So speaking of ULI, before I go on to my next question, how has your work, just your specific work with ULI, maybe broadened your view of development beyond the design aspects of it?
Yeah. So my first exposure to ULI was probably 3-4 years ago, attending the Place Summit, and it kind of exploded my brain a little bit. You know, as an architect, I've mostly been focused on individual building projects. I did early in my career work under a licensed planner and did some kind of master planning for military bases, college campuses, small housing neighborhoods, some of that early on, but hadn't really ever thought at that bigger level. And as someone who really loves to understand the way things work together, man, all the ULI stuff helped me understand so much more about what goes into developing our cities and towns and neighborhoods. And even, you know, some of the conversations about potential problems that are up ahead if we don't address them, those things really helped me understand how important things like sewer lines and water availability really do affect us all. And not totally. not just the people who can't find a house because they're not being built. You know, there's so many things like that that I wouldn't have had a clue. Even understanding that there are certain things that city level governments can do, but certain other things that can only be done at the state level in Arkansas has opened my eyes to recognizing, oh, there's a need for people at a local level to gel and work together to get some things changed at the state level to allow for more housing affordability. Like a couple of things, for example, or one thing that I personally am really hopeful for is, you know, we have generally building codes are your residential code or the standard fire protection code, which is what everybody commonly calls the commercial code. So right now in the state of Arkansas, if you build 3 or more units in a single building, you have to use that fire prevention code, the commercial code, quote, and that almost always automatically requires you to add full building sprinklering for 3 or more units in a building, which almost immediately kills a project financially. That's part of why we don't see a lot currently of those kind of 3 to 20 units in a building. The things that actually fit really well with infill development and work well in our neighborhoods, don't stress our roads, don't stress our infrastructure. That's one of the factors that I, as an architect, hope to help progress and get adjusted at the state level. There's a couple other states recently who have just changed that threshold from 3 units to say 8 or 10. There's other ways to kind of do it at the state level too. So there's some people I'm talking to and in preparation for our next state legislature, thinking about how we can propose something that would help open up more possibilities for housing that's affordable for people.
Yeah. And actually, you know, we had at the last place summit, they had some folks come from another state. And I want to say it was Montana, I think.
Yes.
Where they worked at the state level to affect change that would impact all of the cities that are in Montana. And I want to say it had to do with ADUs and some other things. So I think it's important for people to understand what are the steps necessary in order to affect the change that you seek in your community. Some of it can be done at the local level. A lot of it can be done at the local level. A lot of it has to be done at the state level too. Mm-hmm. And once you understand that and you can make an argument or a case for why what you're proposing is so, you know, perfect for your community as well as other communities throughout Arkansas, it gives you a better leg up, you know, in terms of building a rapport and a relationship with your local state representatives, because they will be the ones that will carry this with you through to the finish line if that is such a thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And related back to ULI and my involvement there, a year ago, I took on a volunteer position as the lead for the Academy of the Built Environments. So that includes a couple of initiatives I've already mentioned, or you mentioned Faithful Foundations. I mentioned Ready. We also have a program called Urban Plan. It's a gamified city planning competition. It's really fun. You get to like use Lego blocks and a computer simulation. And we've done it with groups ranging from like high school students to city leaders. I'm actually going to go help a group in Missouri tomorrow, post a version of it to there. And then an additional initiative called the Heinz Competition for college students. All of those things are education specific within the realm of the built environment. And for me, coming from an architecture background, I would say I had a good, very good understanding of a very specific portion of the process, you know, from like design through construction. But there's a whole lot of stuff that happens before design and a whole lot of stuff that happens after construction that I didn't really have a clue about. And I've really appreciated just participating in ULI content and then helping lead these different initiatives and build committees and help do lots of different things with these initiatives. My understanding of that process has really grown and I'm really grateful. I think, yeah, I couldn't have even had the right perspective that I have now about housing without some of that background, understanding the way that things all work together.
Yeah. And I would encourage anybody listening to this to, you know, potentially get involved with ULI, even on the lay person's level. They put on a lot of events, a lot of programs. Mm-hmm. You know, they're training the next generation of planners, land planners, urban planners, designers, landscape architects, and the like. But I think it's really valuable to spend a little bit of time understanding what goes into the whole planning process, because then I think you just have a much more, a stronger appreciation for the work that is entailed to affect the type of change that you might hope to seek in your own backyard. So I think ULI is a great place to start. Speaking of what you mentioned a second ago, I want to bring up Faithful Foundations. Can you just quickly share, because I heard about it last year and I was blown away at how they were the application of this whole concept, but can you share how churches are stepping into the housing conversation nationwide, but then why this would matter for our region here in Northwest Arkansas?
Yeah. We've mentioned NIMBYs a couple of times, not in my backyard.
Right, right.
The counterpoint to that is YIMBY, yes, in my backyard. So if you want to come support housing in your neighborhood, you're a YIMBY. There's kind of a buzzword that's been going around for the past couple of years, YIGBY, yes, in God's backyard. So if you're interested in this, you can Google that term. You'll find lots of great info projects that have happened around the country. I know with ULI, there were so many conversations over the past year. You know, I remember going to get a drink or food with people after a ULI event and a bunch of us sitting around a table talking about this, like, how can we bring this to Northwest Arkansas? I was at the point, you know, a year ago where I was driving around town and seeing, going down the street and seeing several churches with extra land right in the heart of a neighborhood, several on the same street going, oh man, you could fit some great housing there. And, you know, especially with a church group that's already working on a mission to support their community, to provide help for people who need it. Like, what a great next step to be able to actually provide housing. So those kind of conversations have been happening for a while. And I will say the other initiatives that we do within the Academy for the Built Environment, we're all originated at the national level for ULI, and we've applied them here. Well, Faithful Foundations is something that originated here in Northwest Arkansas through ULI, and I'm really proud of how we've been developing it. So we are nearly through with our first cohort of six churches across Northwest Arkansas in four different cities who have applied to be part of the program. We've had a series of education seminars, so classes every other week where industry professionals have talked about all the different steps of the process to develop housing, what the options could be for each of them, anything from single family homes to apartment buildings to stuff in between, talking about things like finance and property management and different things, just to give people who are involved in this decision-making level the base level of knowledge that they need. And each of those six teams are currently working on preparing a feasible pitch for their land, something that they would like to try to do. And they'll be presenting it in a couple weeks at an event in the hopes that at that event, some of the local charitable organizations, investors, development companies, design companies, whatever, will pair up with some of these groups who really need to build their team to start moving forward. So ULI provides the education component and the capacity building, the networking and connection component. And so after their presentation, we hope to continue to support them in whatever ways we can, but they really have to have the professionals on their side to start moving forward. And it's really exciting because I will say, I think every one of these six churches already has at the minimum, like a food pantry or a community meal. So they already have a group of people that they're helping support. And most of them, as they're talking about their feasible proposal for housing, that's the group that they're targeting to want to help provide for. And we have, you know, it's such a diverse group of churches and a diverse range of things that they want to do. But I'm really excited and hopeful that we'll get to see some of them move forward soon. And I also hope that we'll get to continue to do this program yearly and have more and more churches take advantage of it. You know, in Northwest Arkansas, a lot of our churches have extra land that is maybe just a greenfield. Sometimes they have big parking lots that might be underutilized too. And usually that land is owned outright because it's been in possession of the church or the church organization for a long time. And it's tax exempt because of the status of churches. And so when you develop housing, you know, your land cost is usually a good chunk of 20 to 30% of your cost of building. And so to help eliminate that from the equation automatically gets you to a level of affordability just to eliminate that cost. And then when you add in mission alignment and the possibility that they're maybe already providing some programs at the church facility for people that need affordable housing, it's such a great matchup. And I'm so excited to hopefully see this develop further and further.
Yeah. And there are some churches in the other, in other parts of the country that are doing this as well. So
yes. So it's been done a lot.
This is not like, oh, this is a pie in the sky. We'll see if they can do it. No, it's actually been put in. You know, it's like all you need to do is see somebody get it done once. And it's like, okay, how do I replicate that over here in my backyard? So
exactly.
So there, I think there's some tremendous opportunities. I think it's going to, I look forward to seeing how Faithful Foundations continues to grow and develop, especially with the number of houses of worship here in Northwest Arkansas and the land that they have. I mean, it's just, it's a perfect combination. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, I think we had some research done as part of the program. I think we have over 7 square miles of land held by tax-exempt religious organizations in the 2-county area of Northwest Arkansas. That includes everything. So some of that is obviously used for church facilities and parking, but that's a lot of land. And not all of that is covered.
Yeah, that is a lot of land. So yeah, that's huge. All right. So I have a question I want to ask you as a practicing architect, and this is kind of around the architectural mindset. Why is the way architects think and like seeing ripple effects and systems valuable in the policy and planning aspect of what we're talking about here?
I'm glad you brought that up. There, Most people know that an architect designs a building, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
But they don't usually recognize that the architect is kind of the linchpin connector for everybody that's involved in that building, from the owner to other members of the design team, including engineers, to members of the construction team, the contractor. And as an architect in your training and your experience, you have to learn at least a little bit about everything, because you're the check to make sure that nothing sounds too crazy, and to know who needs to talk to who to get something to happen, and to understand the ripple effects, like you said, of a decision here that may be about a structural system and how it's going to affect, say, the plumbing and HVAC system. So at a larger level, that kind of thinking and the way your brain works and is trained through school and through your work, man, it leads to great understanding of the way systems work. It's part of what drew me to be excited about, you know, regional growth and housing. It's like, okay, I see how this, my brain connects the dots in those things. And not everyone naturally makes those connections. And architects, just generally, we are trained to do that. And that skill is definitely applicable at the broader level. And getting people to work together. I mean, I have a story from many years ago in my career. I was working with a mechanical engineer and an electrical engineer on the same project who were in a different state than I was in, but they were in the same room and they never talked to each other. They only talked to each other when I got both of them on the phone together. So just as an example, like that sometimes applies at a broader level with things like housing or city infrastructure. Sometimes you just need someone there who recognizes that those two people need to talk to solve the problem and actually kind of forces them to talk about it. So yeah, that's something that I don't think a lot of people recognize architects do on a daily basis. We, as architects, we kind of joke that we're part-time therapists, part-time, you know, school teacher, babysitter sometimes. But yeah, those are such great skills that not everyone realizes we have.
Yeah, no, it's funny. I mean, having worked with design professionals for the many years I had, it's always funny to see the reflection from each of the different professions. So, you know, architects talking about engineers and engineers talking about architects. It's always funny. Yeah. But no, I think it does give a certain set of skills that really lend themselves to some of the issues that we're faced with here in Northwest Arkansas, especially as it pertains to, you know, coming up with real solutions for planning and development and making sure that we have the right housing stock for every segment of our community. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and that it's more than a notion, I think, to do that. It's like there's a lot of hard work and a lot of behind the scenes work that goes into making that happen.
Absolutely. And you definitely need those specialists, like I mentioned, electrical engineers and mechanical engineers at the building level. You need specialists in infrastructure and specialists in different things, but sometimes they're not talking to each other. So that's where someone like me maybe can help at that broader level to help bring things together.
Yeah. And I'm curious, just as a as an aside to this, that particular question, how has your like career journey shaped the way you think about like resilience and community impact? Because you've worked with traditional design firms, you've gotten involved with community-based programs. How has your journey shaped how you look at and think about resilience and community impact?
Yeah, I think coming, my first job was for a very big company, a small local office for a big company. And I honestly didn't get to do a lot of work locally and kind of missed that. And I was really grateful when I transitioned to my next position that I was doing local work. And as I've gone through my career, I've gotten more and more, I've gotten smaller and smaller in terms of groups that I work for. Now it's just me, and also more and more local and close to my heart. I think that personal investment is so much more evident whenever you get to walk by or drive by or go into something that you've designed on a regular basis. It really helps you understand the life cycle of a building too. Like if you design something far away and you never go see it again, maybe you go to the grand opening, that's one thing. And you get to take cool pictures, but to understand more about what does it look like a year later or 10 years later, that's a whole different level. And I really have appreciated that more recently in my career.
Yeah, no, as my kids like to say, it just hits different, you know? So, yes, it definitely does. All right. So as we talked about some of the barriers to housing affordability, and, you know, I'd love to know what makes you hopeful about this area, Northwest Arkansas specifically, as it pertains to housing affordability. Is it something that you think we will be able to overcome and or at least in some way, shape or form, figure it out or solve the problem enough so that a majority of our population can benefit from it?
I have a lot of hope. We have organizations like ULI, we've talked about a lot. I've also gotten to partner with Groundwork some too. They are doing such a great job of educating normal, everyday people who don't work in the government or in development about these factors. I mean, they have done lots of just kind of public education, as well as this program they are doing right now called Chats. It's kind of an orchestrated conversation that you can talk through with a small group of people. And I love getting to have those conversations. I personally have taken it upon myself to educate a lot of my friends who don't work in this area, in this kind of realm. And a lot of times that I get this, whoa, I didn't know that, you know, usually related to things like household size that we started talking about, or like things that are happening, the factors that go into play, why traffic is getting worse and what the actual solution to traffic is. It's not, hint, it's not adding more lanes to the highway.
Yes.
So, yeah, I think that more and more everyday people are understanding more and more. And I am hopeful that we're kind of at this tipping point of taking more and more action without as much resistance. Like I said earlier in the conversation, sometimes people who speak out against things are kind of underinformed. They don't really understand. And my hope is that they'll continue to be able to learn from organizations like Groundwork and ULI and other initiatives around Northwest Arkansas about it, and have more empathy about it, to recognize that just because I want to live on 15 acres outside of town doesn't mean that everybody wants that. And the best way to maintain the lifestyle that you want is to help support things like infill development and bike trails and bus routes. That is how you preserve a lifestyle on the edge of town on your acreage without a ton of traffic. So,
yeah. And don't forget coffee shops in residential communities.
Yes, please. More of that.
Yes, more of that, please. So, all right. And then last question, I promise. If you could fast forward 10 years, in your minds, I'm just asking you, what would a successful housing future look like in Northwest Arkansas?
I think just having a lot more variety. I know I mentioned this earlier, but we've almost exclusively been able to build big apartment complexes or big single family homes on big lots, and not a lot in between. And I think to really provide options for all kinds of people, whether it's people on the lower end of the income spectrum or people who just prefer and are willing to sacrifice square footage or a big yard to live in a walkable area, having more of those options is, man, that would be ideal. To be able to have more people opt out of taking their car everywhere, that's huge too. And really seeing like the entire spectrum of our population getting what they need at a fair rate. You know, there are factors related to affordable housing that aren't exactly housing. You know, they may be things like, you know, economic factors or personal challenges, but still, you know, there are things that can be done to help people. And let's just remove as many obstacles as we can to providing the variety that we need. You know, those walkable communities are the most beneficial for your cities and the most vibrant. I mean, there's reasons that walkable areas of our towns are what you see on the websites for our cities. Those are the pictures that you see, you know, on brochures and on billboards, because people love them. We don't have to just travel to walkable places that we love. We can build that here. And I hope we'll continue to do that. That's my hope, is that we'll have those kind of options.
Exactly. Yeah. When I think of like DTR, Downtown Rogers, the historic district in Fayetteville, all of those areas off of Emma in Springdale. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, anything off the square in Bentonville, you know, just that walkability is huge. It speaks to quality of life. It speaks to being in proximity to where a lot of the activity and action is happening. And so, yeah, I'm excited about it. I think that in the next 10 or 15 years, we'll look back, we'll have a few more gray hairs then, but will also be really impressed with some of the changes taking place. And a lot of that's happening because of the hard work that people are putting in today. Your sacrifices and work that you've done with ULI, what you've done with the Housing Task Force, as well as your other peers in Fayetteville and beyond, it's all laying a foundation for what we hope to see here in Northwest Arkansas in the next 10, 15, 20, 25 years. So, and I certainly hope I'm around to witness some of that and to see this area continue to grow, because we are the heartbeat of America, and it's just a matter of time to continue to strengthen all of the different arteries of that heart so that things really flow smoothly here in Northwest Arkansas.
Yeah, for sure. To be able to keep the unique identities of each of our towns, to be able to keep that aspect of getting to ride my bike places, but also go to the edge of town to a farm and a creek. Like, yeah, to be able to keep those things that we all love, that's what I want to see.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Jessica, thank you so much. If anybody wants to reach out and connect with you, what's the best way for them to do that?
My business is called Gemstone Design Studio. So my email address, jessica@gemstonedesignstudio.com. Yeah. I'm on LinkedIn and Instagram and Facebook with that. So yeah,
we'll put all of that in the show notes too. I mean, Jessica's already shared her headshot with us and everything. So we'll make sure that anybody listening to this that wants to reach out to Jessica and get some additional data points or feedback from her, or even just enlist her for some help. I think it's please support this young lady and the amazing work that she's doing in our community. But Jessica, thank you so much for joining us today. We really, really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Well, folks, that's my conversation with Jessica Llewellyn. Her insights really remind us that solving big challenges like housing affordability really does start at the local level, with neighbors, churches, policymakers, and advocates coming together to shape our shared future. So this is what the Walton Family Foundation Future is Local series is all about. So be sure to check out the other episodes in this series and share them with someone who cares about the future of Northwest Arkansas. I'm your host, Randy Wilburn, and we'll see you back here next week for another new episode of the I Am Northwest Arkansas podcast. Peace.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of I Am Northwest Arkansas. Check us out each and every week, available anywhere that great podcasts can be found. For show notes or more information on becoming a guest, visit IamNorthwestArkansas.com. We'll see you next week on I Am Northwest Arkansas.